This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by MMComfortSystems.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So as of last week, and this is based on the latest amount of data that we have available for a full week at least, Seattle and King County Public Health received nearly 150 complaints from people about businesses that may not be complying with this new vaccination mandate. Now, when you go ahead and complain about something like this, when you actually take the time to connect with King County, Seattle Public Health, complaining that some business, whether it's a restaurant, a bar, a gym, or a movie theater, didn't ask for someone or everyone's vaccine passport. When you complain, we call that a narc. And what do we think about narcs, children? Boo! We don't like them at all.
Narcs get stitches, Jason. That's the saying, right?
Well, it rhymes. It can't rhyme with stitches because that's a bad word. So narc? Narc get... I'll figure it out at some point. But I think you're on the right track. I've heard something similar to that. Now, this is a story that was picked up by both Como and Caro 7 TV. And with a tepid exception, all the people that are featured in both of these stories are people who support the vaccine passport system. There was no one really complaining, not really. There was no one saying, this is outrageous. I find this to be asking for too much. I don't want this in my community. I think it's unfair. I'm vaccinated. You should trust me. None of that. So by both of these reports, I guess I understand that 150 complaints have come in because everyone loves the idea. You folks in Algona, oh, you love it. Those of you listening right now in Maple Valley, Bellevue, North Bend, you love this idea. You want more of it. Let's talk to a random dude who talked to Como TV.
I just feel like I feel included in there, that they care for me.
They care for me, he says. Now, according to Como, this guy drove from Snohomish County into a restaurant in King County just so he could feel safe, not realizing that even if you're vaccinated, even if you turn in a negative test within 2 days or 3 days, you can still catch and spread COVID. It won't be as severe if you're vaccinated and you get it. That's good news. But I feel like he might have a somewhat false sense of security in the context of, even if he were to get COVID, my assumption is he doesn't suffer from a severe underlying health condition, because if he did, he probably wouldn't go out at all right now. Not yet. He would want to wait until that number of vaccinated people hits the 200% that Inslee is hoping for. How will he get that? Don't know. But will he stop any of these policies until he gets there? No.
208%, by the way.
Is it 208?
Yeah, it went up in the last 24 hours.
If you want to be specific. Brian was enjoying a night out in Ballard on Wednesday. He spoke to Cairo. And he's saying, look, it's so simple to ask for the passport, and it's so easy to hand it over.
Most people ask if they can see a vaccine card or like a picture of it.
Whether that's going to be on a phone, whether that's a paper copy, whether it's been laminated. I mean, there's just so many different options.
I mean, whether it's been tattooed, whether you've got a carrier pigeon flying it over in case you left it at home. Maybe you have smoke signals that are putting it out there. But sometimes if I'm being honest, I drew mine. I hand drew mine. I signed it. And, you know, my drawing is so good that even the little scan is on there. We were able to get that there. So you can scan it.
The QR code?
Is it a QR code or a barcode for this? Whatever the code is, I was able to do it. Yeah.
Oh, good job.
I mean, you could have it on your phone. You can have a physical copy. You can get it laminated. There are all so many ways that you can do it. It's so easy. Okay, good for you. Good for you. I'm glad you're calling out these businesses. You see, those irresponsible businesses, those evil businesses, they are not doing it the way they're supposed to. They are not listening to the mandate of King County Executive Dow Constantine. For shame. For shame. Obviously, this means that we've had, based on these 150 complaints, some of them are multiple, so let's just say 90 to 100 restaurants getting hit or businesses getting hit. Clearly, we will have seen evidence of some kind of surge of COVID cases at these locations. That's my assumption. Now, they haven't actually provided any of that evidence yet, so I don't know if it's actually resulted in anything beyond simply saying, well, they might not have asked for someone's passport. I'm not even sure. I think that's what I saw or what I didn't see. So maybe we should do... Okay, fine. Now, Ira Munch, he's the general manager of the Woodblock restaurant in Redmond. He's bragging to Como TV saying, I'm not getting any complaints. I would never get a complaint. Why? Because I love this vaccine card, passport, whatever process. I love it. I'm all about it. It's so easy.
People come up. We just ask for either a proof of vaccination or, you know, a negative COVID test within 72 hours.
I mean, it's that easy. I mean, sometimes, you know, if it's late at night and someone's coming looking like they want to hook up, we'll ask for an STD test as well, maybe. No, you don't do that, only for COVID. But the other stuff that can lead to serious complications, health complications, and not even be potentially cured, depending on what it is we're talking about, that's something different. We're not going to pay attention to that. Got it. He just seems happy that he's not getting too many complaints. He gets a few.
Hey, we'll get some nasty emails once in a while, but, you know, overall, I think, especially in this area, it's pretty easy.
Yeah, it's so easy. Even a caveman can do it. Don't be the person who complains. Be the person who chooses not to go to that restaurant if it really matters, or go to that gym, or choose not to go to that movie theater, whatever it happens to be. I don't think I've ever felt the need to rat someone out to a governmental agency other than calling 911 if I see something that's blatantly illegal.
You never seen a rat in a coffee shop and been like, you know what? The health department.
No, the thing is, let's say I saw a rat in a coffee shop. Perfect example. I just wouldn't go back. I might. This was before, if I was doing not a radio show. This was before radio show. I just wouldn't go back.
When you were a normal person?
When I was a normie. But now that I am an elitist who's on the radio, I would talk about it. I would write about it. There's no doubt. But I've never complained about a lack of some sort of, I don't know, basic bit of service that's supposed to occur. Now, I've certainly made a deal out of people who wanted me to make a deal out of it, right? Like, there's two different groups of business owners. The ones who are so egregious, they are begging for something, right? That I don't think I've ever been in that case, but there are some businesses that are so over the top in how little they pay attention to just even basic safety standards. A toilet is in the kitchen. That's so weird. That kind of thing. Okay, I would totally rat that person out, or hope someone else, I would take a photo first. The other ones are the ones who come up with policies that are intended to earn your ire. We talked about this earlier this week with Windy City Pizza, where they decided to put out their policy saying you shouldn't eat anywhere if you are unvaccinated. I'll call that out, because that is asking for a response. That is a political position that they're taking, effectively. But something like this, what's the issue with you just not going back to the restaurant? I know that you think you're saving someone's life, right? This idea that I'm saving lives because if you're unvaccinated, you're killing people, even though none of the data actually backs up that claim. But other than that, why would you do it? And by the way, if I was one of the businesses that was getting caught, or had the potential of getting caught, I might talk to a TV network about how stringent my rules are. I'm just throwing that out there. I just might do an interview and be all like, oh, I would never do that. I'm on top of my game, stupid. I mean, you don't have to be here anymore with the camera on. You can leave now. I gave you that was a good comment, right? That was good. Okay. Yeah, okay. You don't have to be here for the people are coming. I got to pay attention to the rush. Again, it's not because I don't want you taking a photo of me or a video of me not checking people's passports, but, you know, I have to pay close attention to checking everybody's passports. And you being here makes me nervous. You ever heard of something called pee shyness?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Okay.
I don't suffer from that, no.
Yeah, no, and I definitely don't either. I'm not going to now be able to go to the bathroom for 3 hours because I said that. They have vaccine passport shyness.
Yeah.
Believe me, I get it too. Colin, for example, he's the GM at Sasquatch Strength Gym in Bellevue. He's doing God's work. He's a hero.
We want people to feel like it's a safe place for them to come and take care of their health. It's all about our members and taking care of them. That's one of our core values here.
Do they still have to wear masks, though, at these? Oh, they do? Okay. So I guess it's not really just about feeling safe, because if you feel safe, why wouldn't you be able to take off your mask? Just in case someone has COVID? Is that what it is? Okay. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, every single Thursday, I've got a video up on our social media channels. It's a Jason Rancho video update. It's powered by the Novak team, or brought to you by the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. You can visit them online at meetthenovaks.com. I'll be on Fox News primetime today, making another appearance tomorrow on Fox as well. If you miss any of those appearances, you can head on over to youtube.com/Jason Rantz. youtube.com/Jason Rantz. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
Cops in Linwood are being taught jujitsu as part of the attempt to reimagine policing. We'll push aside any claims, which I'm actually surprised I haven't heard of cultural appropriation. And look at this and say, well, that doesn't seem really as good of an idea as people might think. I'm actually struggling a little bit to understand this particular approach in the context of policing. Chief Jim Nelson of the Linwood PD spoke to Como TV. And he said, basically, we're looking to give another avenue for officers to go down if they're trying to de-escalate a situation. Now, I don't know if a jujitsu battle will get to de-escalate anything. It actually seems like it would piss the other person off a little bit, but okay, let's hear him out.
Your mind kind of can shut down and it goes to, you know, strictly into protection mode. And we want to keep our officers out of that as much as possible.
Okay. About 90 Linwood police officers, or employees, I should say, because it's not just officers, they're actually adding command staff. They attend 2-hour classes one time every month, and they'll do it for the next 2 years, which seems like a really long commitment. Could you not have just done it all done in like a week and a half? You have to spread it out.
I don't think you can master jiu-jitsu in like a week and a half.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably can't master jujitsu when you're only doing it once a month for 2 hours.
I'm just throwing that out
as a reality. But he says, the chief says, look, when this is all done, we will analyze the data. We'll figure out whether or not it's actually effective. Now, what data would you be analyzing? I don't know. What would be deemed a success? How would this be deemed as effective? I do not know. They do not say. But I don't know if it's realistic to say, well, we're going to look at the data and it turns out, hey, look at that. Use of force with anything other than jujitsu is down 17%. Jujitsu is up 17%. That's how we made the arrest, jujitsu. Now, it's fully funded through their training budget. So beyond that, they're not getting anything extra for it. Apparently, this is the only department in the state of Washington, at least, that is mandating this kind of training.
By and large, you know, after the academy, that training diminishes significantly, and it's a perishable skill.
What's the level of diminishing, or let's say, memory retention of jiu-jitsu after a month of doing one course?
I think you should go on a deep investigation. You should do jiu-jitsu once a month, Jason, and see what you can retain.
There are officers who like this. Officer Brooke Silveira says, for example, that she loves the idea of getting a new skill.
It's a good way to add another tool to the toolbox. It's just another option besides force.
Fair enough. I mean, it is force, but what she's talking about is potentially deadly force, obviously. Did you watch the video package attached to this?
Yeah, of course. I was very interested in the story.
I'm going to test you then, because there was one thing that kind of just jumped out at me. What were they wearing while they were doing the training?
T-shirts? I don't know.
A sweatshirt.
Yeah.
What else?
Sweatpants.
Yeah.
Some athletic clothing.
Kind of stuff you might go and go to the gym and work out.
Yeah.
Especially this kind, because you're touching people. You don't want to, you don't wear shorts or anything. What weren't they wearing?
Their vests or their utility belt. Mm. Is it called a utility belt?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, I just didn't know if that was a Batman thing. Belt, or,
fine,
okay,
yeah.
Police belt. Their big boots.
Yeah.
Sometimes their flat-brimmed hat that they wear if they're state troopers. You
well,
know,
they're not. This is the Linwood Police. But
and maybe the Linwood Police likes the flat-brimmed
hat. What else do they not have on them at the time?
Their gun.
Okay, what else?
Their baton.
And what else?
Their...
Come on. Come on.
Handcuffs.
Yes. What else?
A taser. Pepper spray.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So, a lot of stuff is not on their body while they're doing the training. Now, perhaps that comes down in the, you know, month 17 2-hour session, how you do this with the with all your equipment and uniform on your person. Does that... I don't know that much about jiu-jitsu, but I know some about jiu-jitsu. And usually you're taking people to the ground. And in this case, it might require a little bit of finesse in movement, not just a full sort of body slam the best that you can. It just seems like if you're doing true jiu-jitsu, that stuff might get in the way.
So do you think like a kickboxing class would have been more appropriate?
Well, you can't kick people or punch people anymore because of the rules, because society has changed. Okay, fine. Krav Maga makes sense. Because Krav Maga, if you're not familiar with it, you basically just flail your arms and you fall into the person and that's how you win. That's basically Krav Maga. There just seems to be other ways than getting into some MMA-style fight with someone to get them to submit. I got him in an arm bar, but this gun is hitting me right. Ow! It hits. Ow! It's going into my chest. No, that's the baton, too. Where are my hand? How did my handcuffs fall off? It just feels like this is the wrong way to do it.
See, and I'm with you. I think that they should be doing the training in their
in
vests,
uniform.
In their boots. It's the same thing with the NFL Combine. Those guys,
yes.
They do it in spandex. They should be doing it in pads and a helmet to see what their actual speed is.
I feel like that would be a little bit more realistic here. And again, my point in all of this is not even necessarily to say it's a bad idea. You listen to the report. They say they've got some new bonds. Camaraderie is being built, which is totally valid. And hey, look, they're getting into better shape. Consider this them going and doing their cardio for the day or the lifting for the day. So they don't have to go to the gym that day. But my fear is, as we have these conversations about moving away from traditional styles of police force, is that are you putting cops in positions where they're going to second guess whether or not they should use this jiu-jitsu style takedown of a suspect versus what they would normally do? And when we have these conversations, understand that officers are making decisions within a second or two. And I don't want them having to think now, hey, let's do the jiu-jitsu arm bar triple kick in the head thing. I wonder if that's going to be the right move and the safe move long term. And I don't know the answer to that. And maybe cops will say, and you can feel free to text, obviously, you know what? No, Jason, this is the way we start our training, the way we think about training, doing it over a 2-year period, even if it's just 2 hours a month, actually will get us to train slightly different, think slightly different, and our muscle memory will be a little bit different. And those split-second decisions we make using a gun or a baton, we can easily do that with the jiu-jitsu. So I certainly concede I could be wrong. It just doesn't seem like I am.
Their instructor is a 19-year police veteran, so, I mean, I think he's got some good...
Is he doing jiu-jitsu in the field?
I mean, maybe he was before he retired.
1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH. I really do appreciate you tuning in. I certainly appreciate it, would appreciate it, if you would head on over to our Twitter feed or Facebook page, twitter.com/JasonRants, or of course, facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. As you know, every single Thursday, we post a Jason Ranch Show video update. It's brought to you by the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. You can visit them online at meetthenovaks.com. And for Veterans Day, I focused on a tiny home village in the city of Ording that is serving homeless veterans. And they're seeing some tremendous results, much better results than what Seattle is seeing. And I go through why that is. So I hope you check out the video. You can also text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 8770, and I'll send you a link to all my social media channels so you can go ahead and check this out. It was an interesting few days in sort of the aftermath of what's been going on with the election in New York City. And in a way, it ties unintentionally, I think, to what we're seeing happen with the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. You're starting to see some groundwork being laid by some activists in how they're going to respond. And instead of seeing the groundwork in how activists in New York City will respond to the election of Eric Adams as the new mayor, it's already there. I mean, they're being pretty clear with what they intend to do, angry that a former police officer in Eric Adams ended up winning the election for mayor. And part of his campaign, a huge part of his campaign, was taking control back from the criminals who have just been running roughshod due to Bill de Blasio's incompetence and his willingness to lean into some of the sort of fringe ideas on the left that went with defunding the police, no cash bail, all those kinds of things. And so Eric Adams says, you know what? I'm bringing back a specific unit within the NYPD, the one that's going to be plain clothes, going out there, making sure that we are making arrests to the people who should be arrested. It's the anti-crime unit, one of several units within the anti-crime division, something that was disbanded because the BLM protesters at the time last year wanted to be disbanded. And what we've seen all across the country is that when you've disbanded these kinds of units, like the gun reduction violence team in Portland, well, guess what? The thing that it went after started to increase. Gun violence in Portland went through the roof. Gun violence in New York City went through the roof, and other crimes. But BLM protesters said it's too heavy-handed. It's racist. It's not. But Eric Adams says he's going to bring it back. And as a result, you've got the founders of the city's Black Lives Matter movement, maybe not founders, we'll just call them leaders, I guess, being pretty clear that they're going to get violent. They will get violent if the mayor ends up actually supporting the police. And they make a comment like this without any sense of concern about how it will be taken, because they know that in the media, they've got a lot of people on their side.
If they think that they're going to go back to the old ways of policing, then we are going to take to the streets again. There will be riots, there will be fire, and there will be bloodshed. So there's no way that we are going to let some Gestapo come in here and harm our people. Right? We pray for peace, for black opportunity.
We pray for peace, says Hawk Newsom. In the same breath as he says, if you do something we don't want, there will be bloodshed. But we pray for peace.
Prepares for the worst. We have people in city council who can create problems for him. We have people in the streets who can create problems for this administration by shutting it down.
So he's not talking around it. He's being pretty direct. He's making threats, death threats. There will be blood. And instead of calling him out immediately and focusing all of its attention on this story, media outlets, with the exception of Fox News, not really touching it. You see some of it, I mean, tiptoed around over at CNN. We'll play some of that audio in a second. But let's be clear about something. If Hawk Newsom was the local leader of the Proud Boys in New York City and said the exact same commentary, but in reverse, if you take away a unit from the police department, there will be blood, we'll be fighting in the streets, there will be riots. What do you think would be the lead story for the next month and a half on CNN or MSNBC or over at the New York Times and the Washington Post? It'd probably get picked up here on the Seattle Times and certainly at the Stranger. What do you think would happen? What kind of coverage would you get? Okay, but since it's a BLM leader, they're not treating it exactly the same way as they should. Should be wall-to-wall coverage, but it's not. Now, Mayor-elect Adams was on CNN. He was asked about it. That's why I say they're sort of tiptoeing around it. They're not going after it the way that they would do some of the other stories. Certainly, they're kind of treating it like they treated the BLM riots by pretending it wasn't actually happening. But in this case, they at least hinted at it.
Let's be crystal clear. You had 13 people who did a march from Manhattan to Borough Hall. There are different levels of people who are involved in the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. Let's not make the belief that those 13 people have really consumed all the oxygen in the room. And I made it clear on the campaign trail. I'm going to put in place not the anti-crime unit. I'm going to put in place a plainclothes gun unit. We must zero Same in on thing. Gun violence in our city. You're seeing what's happening. Mm-hmm. We had a young man, 21 years old, yep. shot by a 17-year-old that was carrying a gun. So this is what I'm going to do. And that was my promise, and I'm going to keep it.
And he should keep it, and I'm glad he's standing up. I don't like that he's dismissing these people. There's a few people. Yeah, it's just a few people. We've seen what just a few people can do to cities. We've seen just a few people riot here in Seattle. So I'm not going to pretend that it's not the threat that it is. But they're very clearly saying over at the BLM movement, the local ones in New York City, saying we're going to get violent if you do this. And it seems pretty damn clear that over in Kenosha, we're seeing the groundwork for the same kind of thing, that if Kyle Rittenhouse isn't found guilty, we too will riot. They're not quite saying it that bluntly yet, but they're still pushing this idea that people need to be really upset that a white supremacist didn't end up getting found guilty. And this, of course, is before a verdict. But part of the reason why you're starting to hear a lot of these calls get amplified about the danger of white supremacy and how the judge is racist and all this nonsense is because they sold something they knew, they should have known, they couldn't actually sell. They oversold what happened, even though there was plenty of video. All of the video was widely available, and it showed exactly what happened, but they wanted you to think that Kyle Rittenhouse was this white supremacist murderer, that he just went out and decided to show up and shoot people, which obviously he didn't. There's literally no proof. All the proof shows that this was self-defense. But now that they realize the public isn't falling for their nonsense anymore, they're going back to their same old nonsense garbage talking points about how everything is racist. Here's an activist by the name of Bree Newsom on Democracy Now!, which is a propaganda online outlet.
The history of judges who are sympathetic to white supremacists mm-hmm. has a very long history as well. One of the moments that really struck me yesterday was when the prosecutor was questioning Rittenhouse on his knowledge of ammunition and brought up the issue of hollow point bullets. And the judge actually interrupted and testified. I mean,
So that's actually not what happened. Bree doesn't know what the hell it is she's talking about because I've watched all of it. I watched it all last night after the show. And I've never been more angry and embarrassed about the prosecution or a prosecutor in my life. It was embarrassing. But what was going on was the prosecutor kept asking questions to Rittenhouse about ammo that Rittenhouse said, I don't know, I'm not an ammo expert. And so then the prosecutor explained what the ammunition he was talking about does. And the judge finally stepped in and said, you're testifying and what you're saying isn't correct. What you're saying is not true about the ammunition. You don't know what you're talking about. He didn't quite say it in that way, but he corrected the record because at that point, taking advantage of the fact that Rittenhouse couldn't answer, he was offering testimony. People who don't know what it is they're talking about are taking advantage of this trial to try to win back the narrative, because the narrative right now is how horribly the prosecution is going. Could something change within the end of the trial? I guess. Certainly seems difficult to see what that could be. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH. Really do appreciate you tuning in. Don't forget, because today is Thursday, what do we do on Thursdays? Yes, we upload a brand new edition of the Jason Rantz Show video update. It's up at all of my social media channels. On this week's episode, we take a Veterans Day theme of sorts, in that we focus on a tiny home village in Ording that's actually doing work that's getting results. They're doing in Ording, a city of what, 8,000, 9,000 people. They are doing what Seattle can't on homelessness. And it's actually pretty remarkable. So I take you through why what they're doing is working and why what Seattle does isn't working. The video update is brought to you by the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. You can visit them online at meetthenovaks.com. So I hope you'll go ahead and check that out. I've got it on all of my social media channels. Again, Twitter, Facebook, just go ahead and check it out there. You know, we're headed into the holiday season. We're in the holiday season. I think this we're close enough to Thanksgiving where it counts as the holiday season. There's some radio stations around the country that are already playing 24 hours worth of Christmas music, which is too soon. However, we have a supply chain issue. We have lots of problems going on right now at the same time where people are focused on Thanksgiving. And I don't know when you choose to go get your actual turkey for Thanksgiving. Most of you probably get turkey, not ham, which is a weird thing for Thanksgiving. Some of you are like, I get ham. You just want attention. But people are going to go ahead and get their turkeys probably late next week, maybe early of the week of Thanksgiving. You should probably go there sooner because turkeys are no exception to the issues of supply chain and supply and demand. All that stuff is still happening in really big ways. Micah Ide is a local farmer. Actually, Micah is based in Ording. Just talked about Ording. And Micah says she's been sold out of turkeys for months.
People buy them and they come back every year and snatch them up.
Huh. So what's going on? Well, Micah says there's a massive problem with our food chain system. And she tells Cairo 7 TV that COVID kind of made it worse.
You start to see where our food chain is a little bit broken, where all of us are reliant on so few companies or middlemen in order to get the food that we need to eat onto our tables.
So they're not able to get their supply of turkeys so that people can get them. You've got delays on the deliveries. And it's leaving people in really tough spots. Ariel Chavez is a grocery shopper. That's how Cairo 7 TV called it. I think we should probably say she's a woman who shops for groceries. She's not a grocery shopper. That's not what she does for a living. But she's worried about whether or not she's going to be able to secure her turkey for Thanksgiving.
Because I haven't bought my turkey yet. I don't really have room in my fridge yet. But hopefully I'll time it out right so I get one. If I don't see something out there, I feel like it might take away a little bit from the holiday.
Yeah, Ariel's right. I would argue that when you get a frozen turkey, I think it's frozen. It can defrost for like, I haven't cooked a meal maybe in a year. But I think from when I was a kid, she can get it now. And if she didn't put it in an oven at all, it would still be frozen on Thanksgiving Day. It takes like a month to defrost. Is that the case? Yeah. Peyton's telling me yes, and I should do that with my turkey this year. So, you know, just you don't have to put it in the fridge. But I hear her point, right? It's a little bit too early for a lot of people. Now, obviously, if you're someone who's got one of those outdoor fridges in the garage or something, or you've got a second refrigerator or freezer, go ahead and purchase now. Do the smart thing. Because what Micah is saying is that we're going to get shipping delays and they're not going to go away.
Well, we've had supply chain issues here on the farm too related to COVID. There's a trickle-down effect on all of these things, especially when you are so consolidated into who's providing the food and then where it's coming from.
You know what I find curious about all of this? There's very clearly, an issue out there with the supply chain. Very clearly in all parts of this country. And we're being told effectively as a people that we are too stupid to understand it, that this is normal. This is actually a good thing. I think it was it Salon or maybe USA Today? I can't remember. There was an article, an editorial yesterday from one of the left-wing columnists in a left-wing paper or website. They were saying that this is actually a good thing because it shows people are looking to purchase. But that's not what it says. If you are, we'll put it this way. Let's say there are 10 people who live in your town and there's one grocery store. And all 10 of you want to go ahead and buy that turkey. The grocery store, unfortunately, only has two turkeys. So you go in and you, two of the 10 people buy that turkey, leaving eight people who didn't get anything. And the grocer is saying, I hear you, you've got the demand. We just don't have the supply. Don't worry, the supply is coming in. Now, the Biden administration is saying that is a good thing because it shows demand, but it's not telling you that it only had two turkeys in the freezers or the freezer section to begin with? Why only two? Why didn't it have 10? Thanksgiving, everyone knows, and I'm talking about turkey in a, as if it was a product, I know. But everyone knows that around Thanksgiving, people are going to go ahead and purchase certain things. And so they ordered more. They didn't get here yet. Why? Well, through a whole bunch of issues. Number one, you've got not enough truck drivers out there to deliver the product. Let's say we were talking about a physical product like a table, a toy that you might buy for Christmas or something. Same exact issue. You've got a whole bunch of people who want that toy. Only two are on the shelves. 10 of the people want it, so only two get it. 8 people don't. That creates a supply-demand crisis. But what the administration isn't telling you is that on that boat, they are so backfilled. Well, the remainder of the toys will possibly take months before it gets to you because you've got one shipment that only has 4 of those toys on board because of all of the delays, because of the lack of staffing, because COVID shut things down unnecessarily. And so, wow, you got the extra 4 toys or 4 turkeys. You got it just in time. But that still leaves you with 4 others that haven't yet been delivered. And they're claiming that this is a good thing. It is. How is that a good thing? It's not a good thing. It would be a good thing if we're talking about supply and demand issues in a general sense. First of all, it's never a good thing when your demand or when your supply doesn't meet the demand, right? At some point, you do a little bit of that because it corrects markets, for example, when we're talking about apartment complexes. You can't have an endless supply of apartments, so you have to make it so that you can price the right people in and understand that some people are going to not be able to afford it, but they can afford another place. That's how it works. But if you have nothing available, and you won't have anything available for months and months and months that clearly people are demanding, that's not a healthy supply-demand situation. That's an unhealthy one. That's completely unhealthy, and they have to know that. They have to know that the reason why shelves are bare is not because people keep buying it, it's because they can't be filled. Oh, they can't be filled fast enough. Well, yes, that's technically true, Pete Buttigieg. That's technically true, but the reason why it can't be filled soon enough is not because of a lack of product. It's because we can't get the product to the place of business to be sold. Why? Because you shut things down, not enough workers driving trucks, and the ports are not being utilized the way that they're supposed to be. That's why. And that's on you, but you don't have any idea what you're doing as a treasurer, or as a transportation secretary. Oh, God forbid if he was the treasury secretary. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message. Don't forget, I'm on Fox News Primetime today. I think I'm also booked tomorrow on a show. I'll make that announcement tomorrow. If you want to see that clip, that appearance, go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/JasonRants. It's the Jason Rants Show.